We're going to start a new topic. And I think I told you earlier on in the year that I would save this topic to now because of its relevance. And that is, we are going to discuss Zionism, secular Zionism, religious Zionism, anti-Zionism, and Yom HaAtzmaut, and the various perspectives from a Torah standpoint in the Torah community regarding the State of Israel, Yom HaAtzmaut. I think that we'll also speak about serving in the army, Shirut La'umi, and the various perspectives, what? Right, we'll include all of that eventually, but it's going to take us a few classes. This week, we will, and the next class, whenever that is, I don't think it's next week because I think it's Yom HaZikaron next Monday night. I don't think there's any classes here. So the next class that we have will be basically part two of this, and that is to explain the various perspectives on both Zionism and the State of Israel. And in that light, how different people, different groups, relate to Israeli Independence Day. Let me give a few prefaces to this topic, and then we'll get into the topic itself. Firstly, any historical occurrence and the assessment of it and a perspective on it for a Torah Jew has to be done through the eyes of the Torah and through the eyes of Halacha. And in order to do that, you have to see it through the eyes of Gedolei Yisrael. That's like any other topic. What Shabbos is, how to relate to Golus, Churban, whatever it may be, we have to see it through the eyes of Chazal. And Chazal doesn't mean somebody 1,000 years ago. It means in every generation, the leaders of the generation, the Torah leaders of the generation, are the ones who have to guide, by Yaminu Bashem of Moshe Abdo, have to guide their generation in how to see things properly and how to relate to them. And how the Torah views things and how people who have Torah eyes view things. That's the mile of the goal of Israel. The goal of Israel are people whose entire data system, database, is Torah. They are so immersed in Torah. They are so steeped in Torah. And they're so knowledgeable in Torah that they see everything in light of Torah, and their decision making is Torah. That's a gadol. That is another gadol in Torah. So their perspective, their vision is a Torah vision. They don't see things with the eyes of flesh and blood, and it's a very big difference. Let me give you an example. We're not going to explain why. I just want to give you the example that it exists. There are 2 days in the year that Chazal miracles happen on both days. One day Chazal were Koveya as a Yom Tif, big Yom Tif. And the other day they were Koveya as a Yom Tainis, as a Tzom, fast day, tragic. Ches betamuz, a Ches betavis, a miracle happened. Talmi HaMelech, the Greek Egyptian king, Talmi, wanted the Torah translated into Greek. First art scroll translation of the Torah. Greek, the vernacular. Greek, that was English then. And wanted to be able to appreciate our Torah and to open it up. And there were a lot of Jews who couldn't speak Hebrew, who spoke only Greek. They only spoke the vernacular. So it's opening the Torah to Jews too. And a miracle happened. He took 72, according to the Gemara, not 70, which is the secular, the Targum HaShivim, it was Shivim B'Shtayim, the Sanhedrin. And he put them into cubicles, and he told them to translate the Torah into Greek. And miracles happened. The Rabbanu Shalom made it that they all exactly translated exactly one the other, and made the same changes to avoid Chilul Hashem and misunderstanding. The Gemara gives 5 or 6 different things. They changed up, they changed the Torah. Example, instead of saying Arneves and translating that from the Greek into that word, the Arneves, right, they describe the rabbit as a what's it called, a Rochrat lion, something with long legs, because Talmi's wife's name happened to be Arneves, and if they put Arneves, he would have thought that they're making fun of him. They put his wife's name in the Torah as a non-kosher animal. So therefore, they described it instead of saying the word. They changed the order of the sentence, Bereshis Baroi Elohim, so Talmi wouldn't think that Bereshis was a God who created Elohim. But Elohim Baro Bereshis. Those are the kinds of changes. And they all made the exact same changes independently. Ruach HaKodesh. A nation. Now if you would ask me, I would have made a yontif that day. You see, God made miracles that this should be successful, and now the Torah is accessible to the world. The Rabbanan saw it as a tragedy. They made a fast day. It was as tragic as the day the Luchos were broken. Why is not for now? But I would have made it a yontif. The Rabbanan made it into a tzum. The other day miracles happened was on Tu B'Av. 3 years earlier, on Tisha B'Av, about 50 years after Churban Beis HaMikdash, Bar Kokhba had his last stand, the last hope that Mashiach was going to come imminently with Bar Kokhba was shattered in Beitar. Hundreds of thousands of Jews, including Bar Kokhba, was killed. And the Romans left their bodies exposed to the elements. For 3 years, they weren't able to be buried. Finally, on Tu B'Av, 3 years later, they were able to bury the bodies, and a miracle happened. Not only was a miracle they were able to bury the bodies, there was a miracle that the bodies didn't decompose. So the Rabbanan made a yontif. Lo hayu yomim tovim kechamisha, and people go out and dance, and they make shiduchim. And they made a new bracha and benching. Now, if I was there, I would have made a fast day. These people didn't come back to life. They just happened to be buried. They were dead for 3 years, right? And they weren't buried. So, okay, so instead of making it a full fast day, I would have made it 15 minutes less because these two miracles have happened. I would have made a yomtiv. But the rabbis made a yomtiv. So what you see through, and again, I'm not going to explain why, but what you see through human eyes and what you see through Torah eyes are obviously different. Yeah.
That they were worried about
but fine. So it minimizes the aveilus, but doesn't make it a yomtiv. Yeah, we can bury the day, for instance. Halacha is if somebody reburies a body, okay? Somebody's buried in Chutz Laaretz, and they wanted to be moved to Eretz Yisrael, but they couldn't be buried in Eretz Yisrael at that time. So you're allowed, under certain circumstances, to unearth the body and transport it to Eretz Yisrael and bury it. The day you rebury that body is a day of aveilus. It's not a simcha. It'll make a yomtiv. Right? It's a reburial of a body. So you have a day of aveilus. What? Okay.
Are they ever wrong?
That's a different topic. It's a good question. Yes.
Chazal
can be wrong, but we have a mitzvah to listen to them even when they're wrong. I don't want to go off the topic now, but if you'll remind me, when we finish this topic, I'll speak about a mitzvah. Okay? It's a good question. Another another thing. Okay, so we see that how to look at any historical occurrence is a very big difference looking at it through Torah eyes and looking at it through eyes of flesh and blood. In addition, even the same occurrence can have different perspectives, and both of them be true. The Pasuk says in Ezra that when they built the second Beis HaMikdash, there was an equal amount of people rejoicing and an equal amount of people mourning. People were crying and people were shouting joy. And the Pasuk explains, the people who were born in Golus Babel, who were less than 70, who never saw the first Beis HaMikdash, were rejoicing. Baruch Hashem, we have a Beis HaMikdash back. We're in Golus for 70 years without a Beis HaMikdash, and now we have a Beis HaMikdash. What could be a happier occasion? The people who were born before Golus Babel, who were now in their 80s, 90s, and remembered the first Beis HaMikdash, were crying bitterly, because the second Beis HaMikdash was missing some incidental things that existed in the first Beis HaMikdash and didn't exist in the second Beis HaMikdash, like the Shechina, like the Aron, like the Luchos, like the Urim V'Tumim, like the Eish and HaShemayim. Now it's like a shul, without a Torah, without an Aron Kodesh. So they said, this is a poor excuse for a Beis HaMikdash. We remember the first Beis HaMikdash. What's this? And they cried. And they both were right. There's the half a glass of water full and the half a glass empty. Different perspectives on the same exact occurrence. Another thing. We said that the Gemara by Rabbi Akiva and the other Chachamim, they saw a fox coming out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Rabbi Akiva laughed and they cried. Same occurrence, two different perspectives. Okay. Another thing. Not always do the Chachamim make commemorations for what seems to be more important things that they did make commemorations for. Example. We are now going through a period of 33 days of mourning for Talmidei Rabbi Akiva. It's a tragedy. Right, and therefore there was a minig, or the chachamim, or koveya, that we should have mourning for Talmidei Rabbi Akiva. Very nice. Do you know there were bigger tragedies in Jewish history around the same period? In the time of Hordas HaMelech killed out all the chachamim of his generation. Likewise, Yanai HaMelech killed out all the chachamim of his generation except for what's it called Shimon ben Shetach. Hordas killed out all the Chachamim except for Bava ben Buta. All the Chachamim, not the Talmidim, not students, the rabbis. Hundreds of them, all of them, were decimated. Do you know when it happened? Do we have one day, a half a day, an hour of mourning for them? No. We don't even know what happened. There's no commemoration for hundreds of Talmidei Chachamim, the Rabbanim, who were killed out. But for Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim who died, yes, then we do have mourning. There's a reason. I'm not going to go into it now. But you see that not everything that seems to warrant a commemoration is a commemoration. I'll tell you something else, more relevant to Yom HaTzmaut. When was the day that they celebrated the original Yom HaTzmaut? Yoshua conquered Eretz Yisrael. First conquering. They conquered the land, took 7 years, and then they divided it. At some point, they started to keep the mitzvahs HaKliyos Baretz that depended on Kibush V'Chiluk. It was some day that they started. Why didn't they make that day a Yom HaTzmaut? This is the Independence Day of Eretz Yisrael. They should celebrate every year after that. We have nowhere in Tanakh did it say that they ever made such a celebration every year. How about building the first Beis HaMikdash? We know when that was finished. We know when they made the party of Hanukkah's Beis HaMikdash between Yom Kippur and Sukkot. Every year they didn't make a party on that day to celebrate Binyan Bayis Rishon. How about Binyan Bayis Sheni? Ezra came back to Eretz Yisrael. There must have been one day that they started their independence from the Persians in Eretz Israel by Second Beis Hamikdash, that should have been celebrated every year as Yom HaAtzmaut. Didn't ever happen. Nor was there any day that celebrated every year being by Sheni. Now there must be a reason why. So we see that not everything that seems to be important and is important has a commemoration every year. Hanukkah and Purim existed in the time when there was Nevi'im, Purim. There was still Nevi'im. Hanukkah, at least there was a Sanhedrin. There weren't any Nevi'im anymore, but there was a Sanhedrin. And it wasn't so sinful to establish Hanukkah and Purim as yearly Yom Tov. Purim took years before Esther convinced the Anshei Knesset Gadol to write Megillas Esther. And how Purim was made, and what it contained, and how it was to be celebrated, didn't happen all of a sudden. Hanukkah took a whole year before they decided to be Koveya Hanukkah. And even then, it wasn't clear exactly how. So that's when there was a Sanhedrin, and there were Nevi'im. So is it a wonder that for a historical occurrence that happened in the last 60 years, right, that there shouldn't be difference of opinion? Yes, no, to make, what's it called, not to celebrate, yes, celebrate, whatever. And you should realize that Yom HaAtzmaut is a very emotional day on all sides. People get really worked up about this. In Chutz La'aretz it's like that, right? The people who celebrate it and say Hallelujah with a bracha or whatever, you know, really go gung-ho, and they are totally against the people who refuse to celebrate it. And the opposite is also true. People don't celebrate or against the people who do celebrate. We're talking now from a Torah standpoint, not necessarily the secular community, but the Torah community. There are people who say Hallel with a bracha on Yom HaAtzmaut and treat it like a Yom Tov. And there are people who sit on the floor and say Eichen Kinos on Yom HaAtzmaut and treat it like Tisha B'Av. And there's people who are ambivalent. Why? It shouldn't be a wonder, but why is it so emotional? Why is it such an emotional day? You know, there's a machlokis in halacha whether you say hallel with a bracha on Rosh Chodesh or not, if you don't daven with a minyan. It's machlokis. The Vilna Gaon happens to paskin, like those shittas at home, that you don't make a bracha unless you daven with a tzibur. So there are people who follow the Vilna Gaon and don't make a bracha on hallel unless they daven the tzibur and they answer to the chazan. Their own personal bracha they don't make, and if they daven at home, they don't say hallel with a bracha, just without a bracha. I never saw anybody get into a fist fight because somebody holds you to say hallel with a bracha on Rosh Chodesh, and one says you don't say a bracha. That's halacha. Right? The halacha says this, I hold halachas like this, we argue, we disagree, like a million other things. But I'll tell you a true mice that happened to me in America, quite a few years ago. And I was a rabbi in Miami, so my shul, based on my psak, did not change anything in the davening on Yom HaAtzmaut. And we're going to explain why. I'm going to explain to you why. Why that's what I hold and why my rebbeim held like that or whatever. There was a group in the shul that wanted very much to say hallel on Yom HaAtzmaut, not to say tachnun. And we had a B'nai Akiva chapter that met in my shul. So I permitted them to have a separate minyan on Yom HaAtzmaut, as long as they didn't say a brach on hallel, which again, eventually we'll explain, hallel, no hallel, why there are people who do say it, don't say. Is it a holiday, is it not? Do you say tachnun or what? What are the halachic ramifications? It has to be based on halacha, it can't just be based on what I think. There's no such thing in Torah like that. That's baltosa. So yes, there's some halachic basis. We'll see what the halachic basis is on both sides. But in any case, so I permitted them to have a separate minyan, not to say tachnun, and to say hallel without a bracha. But the shul minyan was a regular minyan. And for years, quite a few years, it went on like that, very, very nicely. Shalom al Yisrael. One year, I overslept on Yom HaTzmaut, and I came to shul late. And instead of finding two minyanim davening, I found everybody gathered in the courtyard of the shul, surrounding something that was going on. Everybody was cheering. And I pushed my way into the center of this big circle, and I saw two very distinguished doctors beating each other up. And everybody else was standing around cheering on their favorite. What happened? The B'nai Akiva minyan was mostly made up of teenagers who have a hard time getting up in the morning. So there wasn't a minyan at 7:30. The shul had more than a minyan. So a very prominent, very pro-Zionist, religious Zionist doctor went into the shul and asked a few of the old men, would you come and help us make a minyan in our minyan until the people come so we can get started? Another doctor, also very prominent, but very anti-Zionist, who didn't like, these two guy doctors didn't like each other anyway, so this was a good excuse, went over to him and said, not only are you an apikoros who says halal on Yom HaTzmaut, but you're a nesis of Mediach. Why do you want to pull these poor, innocent old men who have no intention of davening with your minyan to a minyan when they say halal on Yom HaTzmaut? So they start yelling at each other, and then it led to hitting each other. And then everybody decided that's much more exciting than davening, so they stopped davening and they had a fist fight in the middle of the shul, middle of the courtyard of the shul. I never saw anybody have a fist fight over halacha. Here, yes, why? Why is it so emotional? I'm sure you all know that on all sides, it's a very emotional thing. Why? So I'll tell you my theory. And I think it's true. It may not be the only reason, but it's a good reason. Here in Eretz Yisrael, it's also a very emotional day. There are rabbis here in Eretz Yisrael that disappear on Yom HaTzmaut and come back the next day. Because no matter what they'll do, somebody will be upset. Either the anti will be upset or the pro will be upset no matter what they do. They won't be pro enough for the pro or anti enough for the anti. So they disappear. Namish disappear. Why is it so emotional here? One of the reasons is because here Yom HaTzmaut is related to death. There's not a family here Kumar of Israelis that doesn't have someone in their extended family that died in one of the wars in defending this country or in securing this country. And somebody who ignores Yom HaTzmaut and as if to say, it's not important to me, that means that the person's sacrifice and their death was for nothing. So you are desecrating the memory of that person. So that's a very emotional thing. On the other hand, it's emotional on the other side too. For the people who don't celebrate it, it's a very emotional thing. Because these people are Israelis who have been here, many of them, for generations. Their families were here before secular Zionism. And that's what we're going to discuss next, the development of secular Zionism and the development of the state based on that. And the secular Zionists, Lamaisa, came here after there already was a Yishuv here, from Yishuv, basically, from people with their educational system, and many of them came to uproot that Yishuv and to undermine it and to pull away their children from Yiddishkeit. Nothing, it was a war, a cultural war. We'll discuss how that happened or whatever. And therefore, the whole concept of secular Zionism and the secular Zionists who came here and undermined the authority of the people who were here already and threatened their religious existence is a very emotional thing that these people don't forget. So to them, the state of Israel represents something that is extremely negative based on the historical development in their own families, in their recollection. We're, you know, Johnny come latelys here. We don't know all what happened, you know, in the development of the state. We came, and it's very nice. So we can't appreciate the emotions. So it's very emotional on both sides for people in Eretz Yisrael. In Chutz La'aretz, I have a different theory. Why is it so emotional there? Because, in my estimation, anybody who's from has to feel a little guilty if they're living in Chutz La'aretz. Even if it's just beneath the surface, subconscious. Because Lamaisa, every week you speak about Eretz Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael and this Eretz Yisrael, that. And if our ancestors could have come to Eretz Yisrael the way we can today, who would have remained in Chutz La'aretz? And yet there's plenty of people in Chutz La'aretz. I'm not saying that everybody has to pick up and move here. That's not true either. But definitely it's a consideration, and a lot of people could be living here and being behind the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael and all the mitzvahs that go along with it, and have no reason why they have to be in Chutz La'aretz. There are people who have legitimate reasons why they can be in Chutz La'aretz. But they're definitely people who should be here. So you have to feel somewhat of guilt and have to answer at least why I'm not there. You have to answer to yourself too. So there are two defense mechanisms, I think, that I've seen that are, again, subconscious. For a person to take away his guilt feelings about not being in Eretz Yisrael. One is to become a super Zionist. In other words, I don't sit down to eat without singing HaTikvah. I wear blue and white all the time. I say Hallel four times on Yom HaTzmaut. And that takes the place of living in Eretz Yisrael. I am so gung-ho about Medina Yisrael that I'll go live there. Right? I'm a Metzias of Eretz Yisrael. Who's sorry? So that, what?
Hypocritical.
I don't know if it's hypocritical, it's human. That's people. We're all like that, in certain things. So, okay, so that takes the place of living in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, takes a little of the guilt away. Or you can go to the other extreme. And you can become an ardent anti-Zionist. Why in the world would I want to live in Eretz Yisrael? Today, Eretz Yisrael is not Eretz Yisrael, it's Medina Yisrael. It's that trait of Medina. And they've transformed Eretz Yisrael into something that's no longer Kodesh and no longer a mitzvah. So it's better to live in America than to live in that trait of Medina Yisrael. That also takes away the guilt. So you either can become an ardent Zionist to take away the guilt, or an ardent anti-Zionist to take away the guilt. And once you're talking about guilt feelings, that's very emotional. Then people are like powder kegs. So Yom HaTzmaut is an extremely, extremely emotional issue, more than other things that are so much more important halachically, and people don't get so fired up about them. That's my theory. There are plenty of other reasons, but that's... So what I think everybody who wants to really be a Torah person has to at least know why they have the position they have. What's it based on? Hashkafically and halachically. And to appreciate that there may be other opinions. Why don't I agree with them? I should know why. I should know what they base their opinion on. I shouldn't just say, well, my opinion's right and there is no other opinion. Because there is another opinion, at least find out what it's based on. Why are there people who are pro, people who are con, people who are ambivalent? What's it based on? That's what we're going to discuss in the next few classes. The first thing we're going to do is give a historical assessment of how the state of Israel came about, a discussion of religious Zionism, secular Zionism, anti-Zionism, how it developed, and then based on that we'll see hashkafically how the different approaches to the state of Israel is, and then we'll discuss halachically, based on those hashkafas, what halachically, is there a place for celebrating Yom HaTzmaut as a chag or not? And if there is, then why do some people not? Why do they disagree? And after we understand everything, then you may not change what you do, but at least you'll appreciate why you do it and why other people do differently. and appreciate the broader perspective of the issue.